faith, say thank you for being a lifter.
You're listening to a KBOO special broadcast. This has been the 38th annual tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We're at the Highland Christian Center in Portland on Gleason Avenue, where the theme of the assembly was Passing the Torch, Still We Rise. This has been an amazing celebration and remembrance event, and we'd like to thank everybody for listening and joining us today. You have been listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. One of the things that we have been listening to the last hour of program has been an amazing musical performance. This has been Daniil Damon and The Greater Works. Really hope you enjoyed that.
Be a part of this celebration, and if I can encourage you to do something this year, I want you to allow this word to resonate in your spirit. Forgiveness. Everybody say forgiveness. There are some things that you are holding on to that you don't talk about, that you sweep under the rug, you put in your back pocket, and you try and live through. But I'm trying to explain to you that you have to get back under that rug and forgive someone that may not, in your mind, deserve it.
Yeah.
Forgiveness comes in many forms. Some of you all are gonna have to forgive someone for the apology you may never get. If this only works and matters for one individual, I've done my job. But I want you to be able to execute in forgiveness. Let me let you know how forgiveness works. It's when someone comes to you that you know has done something wrong. Do you realize they probably know they did it as well? And you actually interact with them like it didn't even happen. You know why? Because God is in charge of your life. And there are certain circumstances that'll happen that'll teach you about where you are in your relationship with God. Don't let bitterness hold you back from what's destined for you. I'm serious. I'm not saying it in a down. I'm actually trying to help you. Forgiveness is a high form of love. Because in spite of what was done to you, you can still love them anyways. Because guess what? Don't forget that you've offended somebody as well. And don't forget that someone has forgiven you as well. This thing comes full circle. Forgiveness. It's a high form of love. It's a high form of love. You know how it is when you're in an environment, you're having a good time, and that one individual comes in and your whole mood shifts. Don't give them that much power over your life. Somebody can literally change your mood by a circumstance by coming in the room and you now are irritated before they even say hello. That's too much power. Amen? Man, I had some friends that I didn't know wronged me, but I learned how to love them in spite of that. because I'm not going to let nobody hold me back from what's for me. You understand what I'm saying? Man, I don't know why that's heavy. But thank you all. We're going to do this last song, and we're going to get on out your way and go back up I-5 until we meet again. Is that all right? The song says, "They that wait upon the Lord." Anybody ever had to wait on God? Anybody ever had to wait on God? Come on.
Wait, 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 wait last time.
Thank you for joining us at the 38th annual tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We've been here at the Highland Christian Center in Northeast Portland. And if you stay tuned, coming up next is the KABU Evening News.
God bless you. AKAs, thank you for sticking in there the whole time. God bless Ken Berry, World Arts Foundation, Inc., and everybody that gave God praise today on a Monday afternoon. We thank God for Martin Luther King Jr. Somebody wrote me a note and said that that YouTube took down his last Sunday speech. And I want to remind them that a man is not dead until he's forgotten. Long live Martin Luther King Jr. and his legacy. God bless you and good evening. Be safe getting home.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KABU, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kabu.fm
Prison
to verify
Pipeline
if a meeting
is a radio
is being
program
held.
Dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
This radio show contains graphic descriptions of violence, occasional use of the N-word, and other content that some people may find disturbing or offensive.
This radio show was produced at KABU Community Radio in Portland, Oregon.
It's a piece of history, and I know a lot of people are talking about it, and I feel like I've just seen people write books on them, like they weren't even there, you know? I was definitely there. This is a part of my life, and I know there were some other people that this was really a lot for. I'm glad that I was a part of it, and I felt like we needed to do that. The struggle continues.
Welcome to Nothing is Final, Part 1, Episode 13 of It Did Happen Here. I'm Mike Crenshaw.
And I'm Selena Flores. Last episode, you heard about the final years of the Coalition for Human Dignity. Now we'll hear from the punks.
We started with China. In the 80s, China was a black punk rocker, a fierce young street fighter, and anti-racist activist. China survived that and built the life for herself in defiance of the targeting she endured in her youth.
The city of Portland grew and changed as well. In 1990, the median home price in Portland was around $80,000. In the year 2000, it more than doubled to $166,000.
Now in 2021, it's at $500,000.
As an effect of this gentrification, by 2010, there were no majority black neighborhoods in the city. The former Industrial Northwest District, just north of downtown, transformed overnight into the condo-laden Pearl District. Crime was down, property prices were up, and the realtors and real estate developers were drunk on prosperity.
The notorious Pine Street Theater, the site of much conflict with the Boneheads, and host of dangerous and exciting shows by Northwest hardcore bands like The Accused and Poison Idea, was rebranded in 1992 as La Luna. La Luna closed in 1999. Starry Night flipped ownership and became the Roseland. Satyricon officially closed down in 2003.
What happened to the punks in this rapidly gentrifying city? For most of them, it was pretty good for a while. There were new places to get burritos and pizza, new record stores. Basements of rental houses became venues for touring regional and national punk bands, so lots of punks quit hanging out downtown. Hundreds of young people moved to the medium-sized city to launch bands or make art or just party in the local punk scene. There were lots of group houses and interesting projects. Jobs were scarce, but rent was cheap, for a while. Anti-racist action had been a vital force to galvanize the punks in the fight against racism and fascism. Conditions were prime for anti-racist organizing, but by 1992, the local ARA chapter was on its last legs. Why? Here's Jason.
The ARA scenario lasted intensely for 2 years. The national meeting was in Portland in 89 and in 90, and we tried to do more in 91, and it was just proving really, really difficult. It was hard to get people more involved. I think, one, because we had already made such stride, it wasn't life or death. People felt like they could sit back a little bit, and they did. ARA nationally totally got hijacked in 91, 92 by the Trotskys. They tried to hijack it from us in 91. They came and with a big contingent and tried to get us to vote to ratify all these things. And we were like, this isn't us. We're not a left-wing political organization. We're anti-racist activists. We're not just looking at the tips of our noses either. We see a bigger picture, and so we're willing to work with you people, but you're not going to come in and take over our meetings, and you're not going to take over our structure. And they did that in many places.
Without the immediate threat of skinhead violence, and also distrustful of the organized left, the punks turned inwards.
Most of the punks had walked away from it. I mean, they were still there, and there was still really, really political shows going on. Resist was huge. Deprived was great. They were still killing it, doing a lot of stuff. Deprived became Defiance. They never stopped doing what they were doing. It was through music instead of through this political apparatus.
Kelly Halliburton was a member of three of the bands Jason just mentioned: Resist, Defiance, and Deprived.
It wasn't just laziness or selling out on our part. There were some issues with the activist groups that we didn't completely align with ideologically. We were more focused on the musical part of things, and that was important in its own way, too. Our hearts were in the right place, and we were definitely, I think we were part of a culture that made Portland the way it is now, for better or worse. A lot of that came, I feel like, as a direct result of some of the things that my culture was pushing for back then. These are things that matter. Anti-racism, this feeling that other life forms can feel pain and fear, and maybe you should think about that when you make your dietary or fashion choices, or the homophobia that we've been raised to accept our whole lives. There weren't a lot of other people at that time outside of our culture, it seemed, that were really thinking along those same lines. And I know there were other groups. We didn't know the older activists. We were young. We were punk rockers. And we were finding our voices. At that magic point in the late 80s, we found each other. We found some strength in that and some unity. And it was really great.
Anti-racist skinhead Pete Little continued working with various political groups.
It's important to acknowledge that in a lot of the folks who came out of ARA and into and out of Sharp and into the anti-racist skinhead scene, there was also, I remember there being some sentiment of folks feeling wary and suspicious of the left and feeling like oftentimes like they had been utilized when needed. The movement that had sustained ARA and Sharp and the other, what I think of as militant but subcultural elements, the movement wasn't there in the same way. You didn't have CHD, you didn't have ARA, you didn't have the kind of organizational and broader social movement context that made militants of the previous generation more survivable. And in some ways, I think building countercultures is valuable because it's a home for kids from the island of the misfit toys, right? And it also can be a culture that offers different values than the dominant culture. Hopefully, those subcultures embrace values that lead towards freedom and that they combat some of the more destructive elements of mass culture. But I think as well, within the remnants of the subculture where there was a lot of infighting and a lot of the same like violent energy that had been directed in a unified way against the boneheads became directed inward in ways that were tragic and self-destructive.
Subcultures were grappling with their own participation in forms of oppression as they attempted to fight against it in the community. Interpersonal violence, addiction, misogyny, homophobia, many who were active in this era were on a spectrum of understanding their place in the oppression, including just being oppressive. The destructive and self-destructive actions of the Sharps repelled a lot of people. Here's Sharp member Michael Clark.
The daily involvement for me dissipated the bigger my drug and alcohol problem got. I got a little too messed up behind some drugs and some booze to hang on to my altruistic good guy persona, and I went pretty south pretty fast. I had some differences of opinion, and I'm not going to go into how gangs or crews are run, but there's definitely a lot of politics, and sometimes things don't quite go your way, and we had some issues around someone beating a woman that I didn't really like, and I had a little too much booze, and I couldn't really let it go, and I kind of got a little busy with it, so kind of went against the grain of following directions, which is something I've always been pretty good at. Long story short, in that kind of environment, I disrespected people. That was pretty much the beginning of the end for me. I was getting really into cocaine and heroin and methamphetamines and drinking a fifth or a half gallon a day to take the edge off. My nickname was Psycho, so I was really known for getting really intoxicated and starting fights we didn't need to be in. You know, I got beyond my there's a time for that kind of thing and just pretty much wanted to kill everybody everywhere I went. That's a lot of energy for a crew to deal with. To be handling every fight you get yourself into, every crew that you start a fight with that we're supposed to be affiliated with, it gets to be a lot. So I had to go, which was reasonable. Broke my heart at the time. I went down the toilet pretty bad. 5/17/06 was the day I walked out of a detox center, and I've been sober ever since. Pretty much have a commitment to nonviolence. And for me, violence and ego was a lifestyle that served me, like kind of like a broken tool. It did a lot of good, but like most things, I kind of ended up abusing it. That part of me is so linked to drugs and alcohol now that I really have to have a commitment to not be violent. And one thing that really helped, in 07, I got custody of my 6-year-old daughter. So I became a single parent of a beautiful little girl, and for the first time in my life, I was the responsible adult around, which was pretty funny because I was 34. That really helped in that commitment to nonviolence. You know, I don't miss waking up in jail and going. I mean, every time I woke up in jail, I'd think to myself, "Oh God, what am I doing here with all these losers?" You know, you know, and I was always in jail for fighting because I never knew when to quit. Haven't had to go to jail. And life looks a lot different today.
The rest of the episode is from It Did Happen Here, Nothing is Final, where Scott Nakagawa and Eric Ward talked together at an event sponsored by the Multnomah County Library.
You know, I was on the board of the Coalition for Human Dignity for just a few years. I was down in Eugene, Oregon, and with help from Coalition for Human Dignity, before I was on the board, founded with others down there a group called Communities Against Hate. We saw ourselves as a sister organization to the Coalition for Human Dignity. It's interesting to think about those moments of success, right? It was the boring work that no one wants to talk about, right? You remember the phone calls, and sometimes you had to just write people a letter. I think about the boring work was also the most powerful. public events we would do, right? We were mostly subculture kids, not all, but these events would pull in folks across the community. There was real power in the diversity of that community. And that's something, you know, we try to hold to now at Western State Center. As you know, this is not about a purity moment. What I mean by that is recognizing our humanity, that